make sure these bastards pay for what they've taken from you.
All right, Congressman.
This is the most devastating man-made environmental disaster in U.S. history. These people of the Louisiana Gulf Coast need our help. Even though this is British petroleum spill, it is America's ocean.
That speech was a godsend. Don't blow it.
This is what we've been waiting for. Today it appears the sun is shining on a Louisiana congressman nobody knows.
It is in everyone's best interest to keep American oil healthy. I'm looking to back a horse that will support our interests.
What makes you think I'd do this?
We'll make sure that you're in the center of it all.
Colin's not going to have one solitary friend in Washington.
Colin, you're not going to resign.
Louisiana's always been one big family. And we don't abandon our family when they make a mistake.
You don't have to be the hero. You just have to make it look good.
What the hell is that supposed to be?
We're in the middle of a disaster here. People are suffering. I'm not just going to lay down.
You're not going to win. We'll see.
People are broke, sick with dispersants. You're the only one down here doing a goddamn thing for us.
And I want people to know I'm going to be there for them.
You are in uncharted waters.
Can we keep risking everything that we work for?
Just gotta fight through it like a man.
Great men, men who build legacies, they aren't always decent.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike Tecretio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
Today, I'm just, you know, hanging in there, really.
I feel like with every subsequent episode of this podcast, you just seem more and more exhausted.
Well, I have a reason this time, other than just existential dread. I was away for a friend's bachelor party all weekend, so, you know, plenty of sleep was definitely had.
Sure.
So I made it, though. Yeah. I made it for the podcast.
Responsible amounts of alcohol were consumed. And
yes. Yes.
All that stuff. So, yeah. Well, I'm glad you made it for the podcast, Mike. In time for one of the most exciting movies of this entire... that's a lie. I can't even finish that sentence. That's...
You know, it was a great movie to watch after traveling all day and being awake all weekend.
The most boring movie of all time?
No, this one. The most exciting movie of all time.
Yes. Yeah, so, all right, Mike, let's flash back a little bit to the year 2010. The BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill happened. Dominated the news for months. Major environmental disaster. And in the 9 years since that happened, it's also served as the basis for a couple of different pop culture items, right? There was the pilot episode of The Newsroom centered around the BP oil spill. The 2016 Mark Wahlberg movie Deepwater Horizon was also about that. And that list includes the movie we're talking about today, 2015's The Runner. But
who could forget it?
Who could forget The Runner, Mike? except for everyone. All the people forgot about The Runner. But, you know, The Runner really just uses the BP oil spill as a jumping-off point to tell a story of Colin Price, a U.S. congressman from Louisiana, who sees how the spill has affected his constituents and makes an impassioned plea to the government to hold BP accountable. His speech makes headlines, his career appears to be on the rise, and then it's discovered that he's cheating on his wife, gets embroiled in the sex scandal, and is pressured into resigning, and then has to figure out how to work his way back into the government. So the movie is pretty heavily modeled on several real-life political sex scandals. The one that kept coming to mind for me as I was watching the movie was Anthony Weiner.
Yeah.
I did watch, it might have been like 2 years ago at this point, but there was a documentary called Weiner about Anthony Weiner and his sex scandals. And this movie mirrors that a lot. A lot of the stuff that happened in that documentary. But, you know, Anthony Weiner was at one point this immensely popular Democratic senator, arguably on track to being a presidential candidate, and then the sexting scandals brought him back down, and he started again from scratch, attempting to run for mayor of New York City, before another sexting scandal brought him back down.
You know, he tried so hard.
He tried. He really did. He flew too close to the sun. Yeah. Or in this case, his phone, I guess. director Austin Stark acknowledges the Anthony Weiner connection, plus shades of New York Governor Elliot Spitzer. But he feels Colin Price is actually more inspired by young Bill Clinton than anything else. which I think is kind of interesting. But he wrote the script. He wrote the script with Nicolas Cage in mind for the role, and he sent it to him as soon as he was finished. And Cage accepted it 3 days later. The movie ended up being released in 2015, just weeks after BP finally agreed to pay over $18 billion in penalties related to the oil spill.
Look at that.
Yeah, so that's a weird bit of timing right there. Nicolas Cage stars as Colin Price, the idealistic congressman whose life and career takes a downward spiral. His wife, Deborah Price, is played by Connie Nielsen, of course known from movies like Devil's Advocate and Gladiator, but to a younger audience is likely known as the lead Amazonian warrior in Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Cage's father, Rayton Price, played by Peter Fonda, which makes this the third movie they've appeared in together after Deadfall and Ghost Rider. And as I was researching this, I completely forgot that Peter Fonda was in Deadfall.
I forgot until right now.
I was like, oh, hey, Ghost Rider reunion. And then like, as I was looking through his Wikipedia page, I was like, oh, shit, he was in Deadfall. That's... And honestly, like, I forget almost everything about Deadfall except for Nicolas Cage, Charlie Sheen in a red, like, devil suit, and that one guy with the lobster claw.
The lobster claw.
Those are the big three points you need to take away from Deadfall.
You know what's crazy, too? Who would have thought of all the actors for Cage reunions to happen? For a three-peat, it would be Peter Fonda.
Right? Just, it seems odd, right? Because, I mean, the prime Peter Fonda years are way before Cage started acting in movies. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
It's pretty weird. Cage's PR person and later love interest in the movie, Kate Haber, is played by Sarah Paulson, known for American Horror Story, American Crime Story, Bill vs. O.J. Simpson, and Ocean's 8 and Bird Box and a bunch of things. She's great. Cage's campaign manager, Frank LeGrand, is played by Wendell Pierce from The Wire, who also appeared with Nicolas Cage in It Could Happen to You. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty wild, right? We're going early 90s Cage reunions going on right now. And Brian Batt, who played Sal on Mad Men, appears as Mark Lavin, an oil exec trying to get Cage to run on their behalf. And Dana Gourier, who worked with Quentin Tarantino on Django Unchained and The Hateful Eight, and had recurring roles on Togetherness and True Detective Season 1, plays Cage's secretary, Daria Winston. So The Runner is the directorial debut of Austin Stark, who also wrote the film. Before this, he was a producer known for movies like Happy Thank You, More Please, Detachment, and Hello, I Must Be Going. According to IMDb, he's currently filming his next film, which is called The God Committee, and stars Kelsey Grammer and Julia Stiles, and is described as a searing look into the U.S. organ transplant system, seen through the eyes of those personally involved and affected by it. So,
wow.
Yeah, sounds exciting, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, The Runner got a very limited theatrical release and was released on VOD on the same day. Its theatrical gross was just over $20,000. Like, not great. The Runner was released on August 7th, 2015. And if you didn't see it that weekend, you may have seen the movie that we saw instead, Mike, which was Josh Trank's big swing and a miss of a reboot, Fantastic Four. we reviewed that movie on Film Bookcast. That was like episode 14 or something. So it was a ways back, if you can find it, but it's a good one. You could have also seen The Gift, which is a pretty solid thriller starring directed by Joel Edgerton and starring him and Jason Bateman. Ricky and the Flash, a really solid comedy drama starring Meryl Streep, and the final film directed by Jonathan Demme, actually. Or you could have taken the kids to go see Shaun the Sheep movie, which I have not seen, but I have heard is very fun.
I'm sure it's great.
I'm sure it is. The IMDb plot synopsis for The Runner reads, "In the aftermath of the 2010 BP oil spill, an idealistic but flawed politician is forced to confront his dysfunctional life after his career is destroyed in a sex scandal." So, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on The Runner?
Well, like we alluded to in the intro, what a boring fucking movie. Which, you know, it's a shame. Like, this has all of the makings, the ingredients for really powerful, like, character drama, right? Like, the cast of this is, like, a pretty incredible, like, character actor cast.
It's a great cast, dude. You got Cage, you got Connie Nielsen, Sarah Paulson, Wendell Pierce, Peter Fonda. Like, this is an insane cast for this level of movie.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like it should have been a really intense, I don't know about taut drama, but like a really powerful character study, right? Like, you know, the fall of man kind of thing.
Sure.
This, you know, rising politician that squanders it just out of being an idiot. But like that happens in the first 10 to 15 minutes before I give a shit about any of these people.
Yeah.
And then we cut 9 months later before I have any time to care about what happened to him and the aftermath. You know, like it kind of skips everything. And it's just, there's nothing really there to hook me as an audience member. A lot of this stuff, like I said, it just happens too quick, I think, in that first act. Or the first act is too short, or whatever. I don't really know how to phrase that. And I just didn't really care. And then it sort of has a message, I thought, and then doesn't. But then maybe it does in the last two shots. And then, but by then I've already wasted an hour and a half thinking you don't have a message. So I don't. Your 2 second, or, you know, your 2 minute attempt at making a point isn't really going to cut it anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
So I don't have a whole lot of faith for his next movie that's like a takedown of the organ transplant system or whatever. Because if it ends up anything like this, it's going to be a swing and a miss.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, this movie is just so boring. And, you know, it's so weird to me. It seems like when the movie starts, it feels like it's going to be this really impactful takedown of BP and all that, everything that happened with the oil spill, and like it could have been a really engaging piece on that front, and then it's also this other thing where it's like doing this kind of societal commentary about politicians. I think it's a weird choice that they take the actual BP oil spill and make it the backbone of this fictional story,
right?
Because like the rest of the movie is inspired by various real life things, but because you're basing it in this real life tragedy, it feels weird. And I mean, there are other movies that do that. I think Titanic just kind of springs to mind, where it's like, that was a real life thing, but it's telling a fictional story. But that's, I think, a very different case, where A, that movie's being made like 80 years later, and B, that's something that impacted like, you know, maybe like 2,000 people, whereas this impacted like an entire, you know, ecosystem.
Right.
But like, the movie seems like it's going to be about this one thing, the BP oil spill. And then it kind of like hints at being about that throughout its runtime, but it's really about Cage as a politician getting involved with the sex scandal, and having it, and like if it was more of an examination of like why people are so obsessed with these sex scandals, or why they happen in the first place. Because I mean, when you think about it, like it's really like when a politician gets embroiled in one of these sex scandals, it's really more of a moral issue than it is a political one, right? Like it's usually between, like, I mean, it's not always the case, but in, let's say in Bill Clinton, right, that was like a consensual-ish thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like two consensual adults, and Bill Clinton was cheating on his wife, which is like, you know, morally bad, but he wasn't like breaking the law, right? And they even like, and they kind of pay lip service to that in this movie, right? They, like, somebody says that to Cage at one point, like, man, you didn't break the law, you're fine. If the movie went further into that and kind of explored our fascination with like why we get obsessed with these kind of things, I think that could have been kind of interesting.
But, yeah, I agree.
But it doesn't.
No, not at all. It's sort of like toys with like almost being this kind of like Aaron Brockovich style legal drama for half a minute, right? Like,
yeah,
that's kind of what it's setting up to be, right? Like, you think it's going to be this one guy, this disgraced politician that's a lawyer, fights back against the evil oil corp, right? That's kind of seems what it's going to be, and then that doesn't do that at all. And it sort of almost touches on the press's role in all this, right? They keep talking about like, oh, if you can manage to stay out of the press, you'll avoid the scandal. Like, if you can just stop getting in the newspaper, you'll be okay. But, like, he keeps getting seen in public and, like, all this stuff happens.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it could talk about the way the media perpetuates this kind of fascination with sex scandals, or, you know, the way it controls narratives and stuff like that. But this movie isn't capable of handling that to any degree that's interesting or important. It kind of just, like, pays lip service to a lot of these issues.
Right.
And I think sucks because of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it also has a very unique problem of, like, seeming like there's a lot going on. It seems like there are a lot of things happening in this movie, right?
Right.
Because like, especially in that first half hour, you have the BP oil spill, and then you have Cage's, like, kind of meteoric rise to stardom, and then, like, 5 days later, he gets embroiled in the sex scandal, and it's like, oh, man, like, it seems like, it's moving very fast, very, like, in that first 20 minutes. Yeah. And then the movie kind of just stops that, and it's really about Cage's kind of like falling off the wagon. It's kind of just a character piece focusing on Cage trying to get back into the government, but that's like way less interesting than any of that stuff. So it has this weird problem of like seeming like it has a lot going on throughout the movie, but in actuality, like, nothing is happening. And then when it's over, you're just like, all right, I guess it's over now. Like the movie even just sort of ends like as it's about to begin. Like, I feel like the ending of this movie, it's like, okay, now we're ramping up into something, and nope, that's the credits. That's it. That's the end of the credits. I think the movie just thinks that, like, it ran out of gas, so it cuts itself short of the hour 20 mark.
It almost feels like it thinks it made a point, though. Like, yeah. That final shot, or that last scene, or last two scenes, I guess. Just I feel like it thinks it's making a point, and I don't know what it is. Which I guess we could talk about. I forgot we don't do spoilers on this spoiler section.
Yeah.
But right, so like the whole movie, throughout the movie, Cage refuses to, you know, join the lobbyist or have this VP lobbyist like back his campaign, right? Like finance it. That's kind of like one of the underlying conflicts throughout the whole thing. And there's this weird narration from his wife about how like every great man needs to be insulated from the evil by evil people or some weird shit. I don't really understand, which made me feel like this movie was going to, it's like the whole movie seems like it's going to be a takedown of BP. And then it seems like it's going to be an embrace of the oil industry.
Yeah.
Especially because Cage sells out. And then because there's this like campaign speech he's giving about how we need to not spend energy to vilify them. And we need to compromise and come together and all this stuff. So it seems like it's like, okay, you're going to embrace the oil industry in some weird way. And then it has this one long shot right there where it's him and he's in front of this oil refinery and there's like all the smokestacks with the fire and the smoke and like all this stuff. And I was like, oh, actually, you're not quite embracing them. You're just saying there's no hope. This is pointless, I guess. Like, we're going to need people like this will always exist, which is even a line the lobbyist guy says, I think. Like, if it's not you, it's going to be somebody else.
He does say that, yeah.
I guess it might as well be you. And then, you know, the last scene is Cage, it turns out, is out for a jog in Washington, D.C., in front of the Capitol. And he, like, stops right in front of the camera, like, dramatically. And then we cut to credits. So I don't really know what the point is. Like, it seems like it waffles between its own stance a couple times in that last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I think the idea is that, yeah, Cage sells out at the end, right?
Right.
And so it's sort of like, like just being in politics and going through all this, like it's just a draining experience, and you will like it takes away your humanity or whatever. Because Cage starts off as this very idealistic, like almost like, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington type of character, right? Where it's like I'm fighting for the little guy and that kind of thing, and that and you kind of see throughout the movie like that getting like sucked out of him by the soulless machine of Washington politics, which hey, I'm all about. I think that's great. But like, but the movie doesn't like do anything with that. Like, there's, you know, an hour long stretch where it's just about Cage being in a relationship with Sarah Paulson or Cage dealing with the death of his father. And it's like, you know, some of that can be interesting, but like, it's not related to anything going on elsewhere in the movie.
Yeah.
And it just, everything just feels like A, out of place, and B, just kind of thrown in there. Like, it's like, like there wasn't really much care like thrown into like, you know, what was being done here. But what did you think of Nicolas Cage as Colin Price?
I thought he was like oddly engaging. I kind of felt for his character in some fucked up kind of way, and I think sort of like you were saying, just as I'm starting to like pull for this guy and like kind of engage with him, the movie ends. Like just by that point, I'm like, wait, no. The whole reason I liked you is because you were going to fight the BP thing. Oh, you sold out. Oh, the movie's over. Oh, okay, cool. Like, wait.
Yeah, but it feels like the movie, like, especially because that's a point where it's like the whole movie, you're like, oh, Cage is going to run for Senate now. And I think the idea is you want to see Cage get to the Senate seat. And I think it would have been a more engaging and interesting movie if it had ended with Cage selling out and then becoming the senator, right? Like, if that's
the implication, though.
Right, but it doesn't, like, it doesn't imply that because it just kind of cuts off. Like,
it's him out for a jog when you think he's in New Orleans. Because, like, they don't really show anything, and then the Capitol's right behind him in the final shot.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
But you don't see any of it. Like, you don't see anything.
But yeah, by that point, I might have been checked out of the movie, but it's...
That's fair, yeah.
Because this is, again, a very, very boring movie, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so you're probably right about that. The implication is there, but yeah, you don't see any of that. And I feel like the movie should... there should have been more done with that. Like, if it seems like it's going to be about this whole, like, you know, Cage climbing back up from the... it could have been this triumphant underdog story, right? Of, like, you know, Cage, like, getting embroiled in the sex scandal and, you know, having to dig himself back up and, like, maybe, like, still fight for his rights but figure it out and get to the White House. And it could have been really good. Or, on the flip side, it could have actually mirrored Anthony Weiner in real life, which I think... This actually might have preceded Anthony Weiner's run for New York City mayor. If I'm thinking,
yeah, I don't remember.
It might have been happening like simultaneously, actually. But like, if it had reflected that more, like where, you know, he's trying again and he gets embroiled in another scandal, and like it's just kind of this endless self-defeating cycle that Cage finds himself in, and that's the note the movie ends on. I think that could have been really cool too. That could have been interesting.
Yeah, yeah. If they just went full tragedy, right?
Yeah, but the movie ends in this kind of like weird in between place, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Especially because there's that moment right at in the campaign speech, which really is like the climax of the movie at the end, where he's going off on this thing and he's not really saying anything yet. He's kind of just like, you know, I have a father that knows a guy that worked here, and like doing that whole blue collar politician thing.
Yes.
And there's like a long pause where he like looks at his wife, and he looks at the lobbyist, and he looks at his friend, and you're like, oh shit, he's gonna shirk the yoke of the oil industry or whatever, right? Like he's gonna stand up for what's right. What is the last hour we have shown him to be like? And nope, he just like says we need to compromise with the oil industry and come together, and like,
yeah.
Okay, you sold out, great.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what this movie is.
I would say I think Cage is fine in the movie. I think he's solid. I think he has a couple of nice moments in the movie, especially I think his speech at the beginning. I think he's doing a very good job kind of conveying the emotion behind everything he's going. When he breaks down? Yeah, the testimony in Congress where he's talking about the BP oil spill, and that's the speech that kind of goes viral. I thought that was a very nice moment from Cage. I thought that was good. Also, just want to throw out there, he's going for his Southern Louisiana drawl, which reminded me very much of his accent in Con Air. And I think he's used it a couple times in other movies, too.
Yeah. It's another New Orleans movie.
It is another New Orleans movie, which is insane. I didn't realize this movie was going to take place in New Orleans when I hit play. And as soon as, like, I guess I should have because I knew it had something to do with the BP oil spill. But, like, as soon as the movie started, it was like they were in New Orleans and they were like, oh, first Katrina and now this. And it's like, oh, God, we're in New Orleans again.
Again? God damn it.
What did you think of Cage's romance with Sarah Paulson in the movie, Mike?
I want Sarah Paulson's movie. I don't really care about what's going on with this. I want to know what her like campaign manager or whatever consultant, whatever she does. I want her story. Her story seems much more interesting. And in general, Sarah Paulson is just like a really great actor.
Sure.
So I was more engaged with her character. Their relationship seemed just like weird. I don't really understand.
Parents
knew each other.
I don't know. Something like that. Or yes, I think his dad worked with her mom on his campaign or something, because his dad was the mayor of New Orleans.
Right.
Or something like that. Their parents worked together, and so Cage saw her out when he first ran for Congress, and they've been working together ever since. And then this romance between them just kind of comes out of nowhere. Like it very aggressively does not work, I think. I don't think either one, like, I love Sarah Paulson. I think she's great in a lot of things. I don't think she's that good in this movie. I think she felt kind of flat to me. And she, like, her one job in the movie really is to have chemistry with Nicolas Cage, and I don't think she has it.
It's fair.
And I think it's partially, I mean, I think a lot of that is due to the writing, because that romance really just comes out of nowhere. You know, that they have two scenes together before Cage resigns. And they're very professional, like businessy scenes, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the kind of scenes where it's like Cage like telling her like what his strategy is, and like, I'm going to resign. She's like, I think it's a good idea, and that kind of thing. And like, that's it. And then like she pops up like 9 months later, and they talk and they, you know, sleep together, and then they're sort of a couple again. But like then she's going back with her husband, and I don't know. The whole relationship just feels like very half-baked to me.
Yeah. It sort of feels like an attempt at like a tragic thing for Cage's character. Because it seems like Sarah Paulson's character is just, like, looking for comfort. Like, she talks about how she hates her job, and her husband are separated, and, like, she hates her kids are annoying or whatever. And, like, he's a distraction, it feels like.
Yeah.
Cage's character is a distraction from all that, and it's, like, this kind of whirlwind romance. But then after a couple weeks, it's like, oh, wait, hold on. Actually, you fucking suck. And she, like, goes back to her family life, I presume, at least, right? They're going to give it a try.
Yes.
Yeah. So it seems like just another, like, thing that sucks away Cage's idealism. But I don't really know why that has to happen. It's very weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Everything about them just doesn't really work. And here's the thing. Like, I feel like all the pieces are here for, like, something that's kind of compelling. It just isn't. Like, it's...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think the performances are fairly flat across the board. I think the writing is fairly flat. Like, the direction is, like, flat. Like, there's nothing that's, like, outright bad. I just think it's boring. It's...
Yeah.
There's nothing engaging about any of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the guy finished writing it and then said, tell my wife I said hello. Because that's it. Like, there's kind of really nothing there. There's no punch. There's no emotional weight behind a lot of this stuff. And I feel like that might just be a writing thing. Like, it's written and directed by, what was his name?
Austin Stark.
Austin Stark. And I feel like it might be a case of, like, a guy thinking he's saying something very profound, but actually not quite getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's noticeable throughout the whole movie.
Yeah. Now, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play in other movies, Mike?
You know, I think it's a sort of unique character at this point. It feels, I don't know, I was sort of thinking of, like, that early stuff, which, I mean, it makes sense, I guess, with all of the Cage reunions are from, like, the early 90s. Yeah, I don't know, it feels sort of unique, right? We've sort of talked about him being this, like, father figure character now in a lot of this era of his movies.
Yeah.
Or like, bonkers action movies, and this is kind of neither of those. It's not really a thriller, right, which is typical of these, like, direct-to-video-on-demand movies.
Right, yeah, this is much more of a character piece drama type deal.
Yeah, so I don't really have a specific movie in mind of what it, like, reminds me of.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I think this movie is somewhat of a piece with Lord of War and Dying of the Light, are, like, the two that kind of came to mind, where they're both kind of political satires, and I think this movie's a little more coherent than Dying of the Light is. but you know, at least Dying of the Light had, like, a couple of shootout scenes to break up the monotony, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
This doesn't even have that. You know, both movies, I think Lord of War is the most successful out of those three. But, like, all three of these movies are, like, movies that are trying to say something about the current political climate of America.
Right.
And I think Lord of War does so relatively successfully. Dying of the Light has some good moments, but is overall fairly confused. And then this movie is just kind of a flat line. Like, this...
Yeah.
It's not that much there. And yeah, we're back in New Orleans, which is, like, you know, so many New Orleans movies at this point. Also, wanted to throw out there that It Could Happen to You is another movie about Nicolas Cage cheating on his wife that also stars Wendell Pierce.
Whoa. I also sort of thought, like, if the character in Leaving Las Vegas didn't die, this could be, like, a spiritual successor.
Interesting.
Just because, like, oh, you know, he talks about how he was such a fallout drunk, and then he got his life together, and he's making it, being a success, and then he falls off the wagon, and it all goes to shit again.
Yeah, you know, because his character has been sober for, like, 16 years by the point this movie starts. Or actually, this movie starts in 2010, so actually... The timeline, like, almost adds up, because he's in Las Vegas from 95. If he didn't die, you're right. This could have been, like, a spiritual successor to leaving Las Vegas. That could have been interesting.
Just like whatever the Deadfall sequel we're going to get to eventually.
Arsenal was the name of that movie, and we're getting kind of close to it. So,
it's kind of nearby, yeah.
It's kind of nearby. But yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think about that. Also, there's a Creedence Clearwater Revival needle drop at one point where they play As Long as I Can See the Light, which is an amazing song, and that reminded me of Stolen, because I'm pretty sure there was a CCR drop in Stolen in that movie, right? Isn't that, like, the song they play to, like, pump them up before the heist, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. And just like Low Rider.
In Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yes.
Yeah, this has less to do with the fact that it's, like, pump up before the heist and more just the fact that it was CCR, but it just kind of rung that in my head. Because there was no heist in this movie. If there was a heist in this movie, I might have liked it.
I might have been into it, yeah.
It could have been really interesting. If, you know, Nicolas Cage had to steal back the oil from BP or something. And that's the movie. I'd be all about it, actually.
Make that movie, please.
Now, what are the moments or scenes that stood out to you in The Runner, Mike?
There's the one scene at, like, the cookout kind of thing that Carrie Cage and Sarah Paulson go to with, like, the shrimp... I almost said shrimp farmers.
you know those shrimp farms they got everywhere in New Orleans?
God damn it.
The fishermen.
The fishermen, yeah. The shrimp boat captains. There we go. Yeah, yes. And I don't know. That was, like, the one moment. There was, like, one of the moments, like, you know, it's basically at the end of the movie where I was, like, starting to become engaged with these characters and, like, what they mean to this community. Yes. And, like, this kind of little man versus the oil industry story that we've been flirting with this whole movie.
Yeah.
And it was like a glimpse of that. And I was like, oh, this is potential here. Like I said, it just kind of fizzles out and doesn't do anything with it.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, to this movie's credit, it does kind of place a spotlight on those, like, small scale individuals who were really affected by the BP oil spill,
right.
Which is not something that I think gets a spotlight on that much. And so this movie does kind of shed a spotlight on that. And so I think that's cool. I just wish there was, like, a stronger backbone around it. Like, if you're going to use the BP oil spill, I wish there was something more to it. Like, there's more bite to the satire, I feel like.
Yeah, it can't really be the B-plot of your movie.
Exactly. You know, I was watching it literally, like, right after I finished this movie, It was last night. It was a Sunday night. And on HBO, Veep came back for its final season. The premiere of Veep was last night. And I watched it. I watched it right after I watched this movie. And in 30 minutes, the political satire, like, just the difference in terms of, like, what they're doing is...
Yeah.
Is mind blowing. Like, it's like, I mean, if you haven't watched, you haven't watched Veep in a while, right? You're a couple seasons behind.
Yeah, I haven't really been following it.
You should catch up, because I mean, it's still fucking great, and the premiere was amazing. And it's just like, there's so much stuff going on, and you would think, you know, the current political climate is very difficult to satirize because it's insane. Like, real life has become insane, and you know, there are comedians and stuff who have struggled with trying to satirize that and like depict that on film and television. I know, like, I think the political comedy on SNL, for example, is almost uniformly terrible for the last like couple of years. I mean, there's some good stuff, but like, it's for the most part, like, it's not great. But then you have Veep, which was so good last night. And I know I'm just turning this into like, hey, Veep is great, you should watch Veep. But seriously, like, Veep is great,
but you should yeah.
And I think it shows that you can do political satire very well even in this current political climate. And then you watch a movie like The Runner, and it's like, what are you even doing? Like, what? Like, why are you even attempting to do this when you can't, like, you can't even come close to what Veep is doing, you know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing to bring up, because I didn't even once for half a second consider this to be a satire. And, like, and I feel like that's sort of, you know, like, we've said it a bunch of times, where, like, this movie seems to be making a point, seems to be taking down stuff, right, and then ultimately ends up nowhere. Which kind of defeats the purpose of the whole movie, I guess. Or the whole point all along was that don't have any hope, the oil industry is going to win, and we're all dead anyway. Which, like, okay, I guess. We don't need that. And I forgot where I was going with that, so it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, maybe satire is not the exact right word, but satire doesn't necessarily have to mean comedy either, you know what I mean?
That's true, yeah.
And so when I'm thinking of satire, I'm thinking, like, this is, like, taking inspiration from several different political scandals. It's based on an actual real-life thing that happened, and it's trying to make a statement about it. So I would classify it as satire in a certain way, but yeah, it's a different kind of satire than what, like, Veep is going for, but it's still, like, you know, there's, like, a masterclass of how to do it right there. And then there's this. And it's just like, the difference was so stark when I was like watching, when I was watching Veep right after this.
Nice pun.
It was so Austin Stark.
Speaking of which, Game of Thrones comes back soon. That's exciting.
Yes, it does. It'll be airing on the same nights as Veep. It'll be a good night. I will say some of the moments or scenes that stood out to me, just kind of like small stuff here and there, because honestly, most of the stuff in this movie did not stand out to me at all.
No.
It's just a very, like, it's a flat line. It's a flat line of a movie. But I will say, when the title first comes up, I laughed a lot. Like, when it's, the opening credits are happening, and it's like, you know, this studio presents an Austin Stark film or whatever, and it kind of waits a while, and then it's like then it shows Nicolas Cage running through Washington, and then, like, as it's the shot of him running through the park, and it says, The Runner. And I was like, oh, I see. So the title has multiple meanings.
Oh, my God.
Because A, he's running for office.
Right.
B, he's running from his problems. And C, he's literally shown running throughout the movie.
Also, he jogs in his free time.
Exactly. I was like, ooh, that's clever. It's not that clever.
It's not.
Also, when Cage does get caught, I just wanted to kind of briefly point this out, because I thought it was really funny. When Cage gets caught in a sex scandal, and I think it's Wendell Pierce who, like, shows him the article, shows, like, the video of him and his mistress kind of, like, you know, canoodling. The article's headline says, Congressman caught onshore drilling.
Yes, that's, yeah.
And I thought that was great. That was a great headline. Like, whoever wrote that headline deserved a raise. Because
art department guy.
Yes. At that point, all we knew about this character was that he was fighting the BP oil spill. And now you have that headline. It's like, that's great. That's the perfect headline. So props to whoever thought that up, because that was pretty great.
I noticed that, but it didn't really even register. And that, yeah. Wow. I seriously underappreciated that one.
All right. Anything else you wanted to bring up, Mike? What did you think of Connie Nielsen in the movie?
I don't get, like, her character. She's kind of, like, shown to be this, like, cold-hearted, like, cutthroat, willing to do what it takes thing, right? Like, she kind of just takes the sex scandal in stride and is like, well, how do we get around this to win still? And then, like, by the end, she seems to have thawed or some, like, it seems like she's just playing Nick Cage's character. like after right after his father dies, or right before his father dies, where she's like, I want to get back together. And like, I don't know, like I don't really know what to make of her character either, and it seems to sort of be this like Machiavellian, like willing to do whatever it takes kind of thing. On her part, she wants Cage to win to lift herself up or some weird thing. I don't know. Shit's already so fucked up, we don't need this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I think, honestly, her character really reminded me of Robin Wright in House of Cards. Did you watch House of Cards?
The first season, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I watched the first season of that show and, like, half of the second season, and then it got insane. And so, I remember the first season was pretty good. And then the second season, like, begins, spoilers for House of Cards, but it begins with, like, Kevin Spacey pushing Kate Mara into a train.
Yeah.
And I was like, I feel like I'm off of this show now.
I might have missed something here.
But yeah, House of Cards is you know, it's a whole other House of Cards to talk about, but...
Nice.
But her character really reminded me of Robin Wright on that show. Just like, I feel like their whole marriage was like kind of set up like based on their careers, and like, you know, it wasn't really maybe it was based on some kind of love at one point, or that they thought it was, but it was really based on like, you know, kind of propelling the other one to get further and further as far as their careers go. So it was a very similar dynamic to Robin Wright and Kevin Spacey in House of Cards, with less murder, which, you know, makes it less exciting.
True, that we know of, at least.
That's true. There could have been some murder happening off-screen in this movie.
In the B-plot.
I wish we could have seen it happening on-screen, because would have thrown some excitement into the mix. But yeah, I thought Connie Nielsen, for what she was given, was, like, solid. It was fine. You know, she wasn't bad by any means. Much like the rest of this movie. Like, nobody in this movie is, like, actively bad. They're just, like, they're there. You know, they exist.
Right. Even Peter Fonda, who's kind of just, like, here to die, I guess.
Yeah, even Peter Fonda, who has a couple of scenes, right? He shows up and, like, kind of gives Cage, like, not really a pep talk. Like, he and Cage have, like, a strained relationship when they show up. You know, they talk about how his past, the mayor, and he was an alcoholic and that kind of thing. And then later, he goes to the hospital and they have, like, one kind of heartwarming deathbed confession scene or whatever. And then Peter Fonda dies.
And when he first shows up, he seems like he's going to be this real, like... Right, it's after the sex scandal, and he arrives, and he talks to the media, and I forget what he says, but he got some, like, smooth politician line, you know?
Yes.
And it seems like he's going to be this, like, master slime ball, manipulate, like, handle this, this situation.
Yep.
Because that's what he does, but then he just goes away, and then he dies. It's like, God, fuck it, come on, man.
Yeah, just give me something to latch onto with this movie.
Yeah.
What did you think? There's this really weird moment, I thought, where Cage calls Sarah Paulson. And he describes a dream that he had to her. And I think it's meant to be endearing, but it came off as, like, really creepy to me.
Yeah.
He's, like, talking about it, and it's like, we were in high school, and I was asking you to prom. But we were our age. We were in high schoolers. So we were middle-aged people in high school, and I was like, will you go to prom with me? And she's like, what did I say? And she's like, you said yes. And that's kind of the end of the scene. But it's just... I don't know. It's very weird. Like, it's like, there's no excitement level, right? You know, there's no like, engagement in whatever he's saying. And I don't know. It's just like, what did you make of that whole sequence?
That's what sort of made me think that it's like to Cage and Paulson, it's this kind of like whirlwind, like two lonely people that find each other in their low points and like kind of come together situation. Cause it's, you know, like, oh, I feel like we're in high school kids again. You know, it's like a kind of a cliche thing with a relationship. Right.
Sure.
So I thought that's sort of what this is doing, but like the sad alcoholic version of that, I don't know. And then it's kind of where the like, oh, you know, Sarah Paulson's character, like, you know, her life kind of gets back together, and she's over this. Like, get out of here. You're weird now. But for Cage, he gets stuck in that rut, I guess, until he sells out for that oil dollars.
I guess so, yeah. The movie kind of just ends right there as it's about ready to start. You know, if that had happened, you know, at the halfway point of the movie, right, if we're like Cage decided to sell out at that point, and then you see his campaign, and then you see him getting to the White House, getting to the Senate,
right.
Or maybe even being on track to the White House. Like, you know, how far can this go, you know? If you had, like, it feels like it just skips over the most interesting part of the movie. It's like, I mean, weirdly enough, the other movie that came out that weekend, Fantastic Four, which skipped over the middle part of that movie, right? Remember, we watched that movie and, you know, that first hour is them building up to them getting their powers. And then it cuts to 1 year later.
That's right, I forgot.
That's kind of what this movie does. It's like, you know, Cage, like, it's implied that he sells out, and then the movie, like, cuts to Cage running in Washington, and then it cuts to credits. But if you had seen, like, his campaign from that point forward, if, like, the second half of his movie was, like, him having sold out and trying to deal with the fact that he sold out, and, like, trying to accept the fact that, like, he's getting where he wants to be, and ultimately selling out because of that, and, like, kind of giving in to the forces of evil or whatever, and the movie ends on that, like, kind of, like, down note, that would have been cool. That would have been interesting.
Yeah. Might have been powerful.
You're skipping over the interesting part. I don't understand it.
Classic. It must have been a 2015 thing.
I guess so. It must have just been an August 7th, 2015 thing.
Movies made by guys whose last name end in A-N-K. Well, Stark doesn't, so never mind. I know how to spell. I have an A and a K in it.
And throw a couple of other letters in there, and you're good.
Yeah. Stark. It's close.
Sure, look. Yeah, you were so almost there.
Look, I just drank a responsible amount this weekend, so it's fine.
Yeah, fair enough. Alright, so is there anything else in the movie you wanted to bring up, Mike, or should we move on to Letterboxd reviews?
Just real quick, remember when Cage drives through the front of his wife's house?
Oh, yeah, like, yes.
That's it. And, like, she takes him back over it. It's like, what the fuck?
Right, yeah, that was weird.
That's all.
Yeah, but at that point, that happens, like, you know, an hour and 10 minutes into the movie or whatever, and I was so out of it by then. I was like, fuck it, I can't do it anymore. Yeah. So, I think final thoughts before we get into Letterboxd reviews, The Runner, it's bad.
Yeah, not great.
And it's weird, because there's no part of it that is actively bad, but it's just so mediocre throughout.
Yeah.
That it becomes bad as a result. Like there's nothing in it that rises above the level of mediocre. So there's not one thing I can point to where I'm like, that was great, but everything else sucked. There's nothing like that. It's just a flatline movie.
Yeah, there's no response brought from any of this movie. Like it doesn't even have the decency to be left behind bad. It's just like it's just boring. It's just boring.
This movie is as dead as Peter Fonda's character.
Wow. Nailed it.
Boom. Alright, let's move on to some Letterboxd reviews for The Runner, starting right now. Here's a 2-star review of The Runner, which reads, was hoping for some Nicolas Cage schlock, but got a snooze fest instead. A drama about a disgraced politician looking for redemption that checks every cliche you expect it to. Super obvious script that force feeds information through awkward exposition and remember when asides, and doesn't bother to create any characters you haven't already seen in better movies. There isn't a single development in the story that you don't see coming from miles away, and Nicolas Cage only raises his voice twice. although his southern accent is reliably unreliable.
Yep.
Oh, also, something about a Louisiana politician whose career is completely obliterated by an affair is hilariously dated in 2018. Just can't put my finger on what makes that so absurd.
Was there a Louisiana politician that had that happen to them?
I think that's meant to just be regular politician in general.
Oh, okay.
Here's a 2-star review of The Runner, which reads, this was bad, but I had fun pretending that Sarah Paulson and Nick Cage could ever be together. Which is pretty cold-blooded, but also, yeah. Here's a 3-star review, which reads, despite looking like Cage's take on the Transporter series...
I would have loved that movie.
I wish we had gotten that movie. It's actually a very dull political soapbox. Very, very boring, even with Cage. In the era of House of Cards, from which the film frustratingly draws influence from at every corner, it's hard to see why anyone should bother to see this film, which offers nothing of substance or value to the politics or filmmaking communities. It's like listening to people discuss a topic that they have no clue about and you're reasonably familiar with. Aggravating, yet unavoidable. You just have to continue listening or tell them what's up. Here's a 2-star review of The Runner. Which, by the way, so as I was looking through The Runner reviews, I found a combination of, you know, people who were disappointed by the movie, people who were Nicolas Cage fans, and people who were, like, really big Sarah Paulson fans. Because she has, like, a pretty fervent fan base thanks to American Horror Story.
That's fair.
And so this Letterboxd review came from this one woman who said, Sarah Paulson did not deserve to get her boobies out to do a sex scene with Nick Cage, and I'm going to go bleach my eyeballs. Bye. which I thought was pretty funny. Here's a 1.5-star review from The Runner, which reads, imagine a season of House of Cards whittled down to 90 minutes and with all of the fun stuff cut out. It's Nick Cage in serious mode, which is not what you want when he's playing a Louisiana congressman embroiled in a sex scandal. But this has all the dramatic momentum of watching Nick Cage watch C-SPAN. Not Nick Cage's worst film, but easily his dullest. And finally got one more review of The Runner. This is a one-star review, and it reads, "The BP oil spill was a disaster of unprecedented proportions. While nowhere near the enormity of that tragedy, The Runner is also a disaster that should have been prevented."
Wow.
And I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah, I would agree.
Here for The Runner. So yeah, The Runner. It's bad. Don't watch it. It is on Netflix, though, if you do want to watch it. It is there. So
if you don't believe us, you can try for yourself.
Exactly. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
And you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thanks so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriscio. If you're listening on iTunes, or even if you're not, make sure to rate and review us. 5 stars would be great. And tell people you know about the show if you can. If you want to contact us, you can do so by emailing nicholascagecompleteworks@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Now join us for the next Complete Works, where we'll be talking Nicolas Cage's role in 2015's Pay the Ghost, which is a supernatural horror movie directed by Uli Edel, whose career includes Last Exit to Brooklyn, Body of Evidence, and The Little Vampire. Remember that movie?
No.
The Little Vampire. It was a movie that came out when I was like 7, and it starred the kid from Stuart Little,
John. Oh my God.
And he played a little vampire.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is from that director who made The Little Vampire, and also a couple of like cult horror movies from the 80s and 90s, like Last Exit to Brooklyn, Body of Evidence. It should be interesting.
Yeah, totally fun.
I hope so. I mean, the reviews are not great, but I'm hoping for like some fun, schlocky horror stuff from Nick Cage. That's kind of what I want, right? Laurie from The Walking Dead, also in this movie too. So
all right.
there's that as well. Plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where we're talking the newest DC film, Shazam, next week. I'm pretty excited about this one too. I've heard very good things about that, so looking forward to that. Thank you so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.
Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Think about that while you're leaving Las Vegas! Boom!